Today, I want to talk about the subject of disconnection. But I'm not going to start off immediately talking about disconnection. I want to start off with another theme called cycles. Now, we have talked about cycles in the past. Who knows, some years ago. But I want to talk about cycles again, because I think that it's a very, very important element or ingredient to understand disconnection. Now, a cycle, as you know, it means when you make a revolution, when you repeat a pattern, like we have the four seasons go in a pattern. Winter, spring, summer, fall, winter, and it starts all over again or whatever. So it's a cycle. It just continues. You all know what that means. Now, our lives also have cycles like this, where we initially start an evolutionary process, or shall we say, an evolutionary task. We have a particular type of task or a flavor of a task. That's a really good way to put it. A flavor of a task, or a task with a particular flavor. It means that our evolution will move in a certain kind of a way, with a particular type of a characteristic. And it will start at a point and kind of make a cycle. And when it's completed, we will finish that flavor, and under normal circumstances, or shall we say, even how we conceive of it, we would think that we would start a new cycle. But it doesn't work like that. It's not that we are continuously in a cycle or patterns of cycles. It's not that where one ends, a new one begins. What actually happens, and we've all had that experience, is that in some cases, there is a demarcation line where we can clearly see this cycle has ended, this cycle is beginning. We can clearly see it because something significant happened which created that mark or that line that demarcated the end of one, the beginning of another. But that doesn't always happen. Sometimes the end is like a experience that it just fades away. The cycle ends with a fade out, like in the movies. Sometimes scenes cut. Generally in the movies or on TV, there's cut is the preferred edit. You cut from one scene to the other. If you fade in and out, it slows things down. It gets boring. Cross-fading is not acceptable. It creates at one point a very confused image. A wipe fade, which moves from one to the other, maybe for the younger people who watch VH1 or MTV and they have ADHD, that's something interesting for them. It's like all this insanity in front of your eyes. But sometimes a cycle will fade away. It just fades, a long fade. And you're left with a feeling of uncertainty. And we talked about that. you're left with a feeling of what happened. I was doing this thing in this cycle, and it just faded away, and I can no longer grasp those things which I took for granted. I assumed they would always be there. I was depending on them being there. My expectations were built upon that I expected it to be so, and I made my plans. I set things up to be that way. So I had this idea that this is the way it was. And then when it just faded out, even though I may have visually the same contact with those things which I had expected, or externally there may be a similar way in which things look, I can't really grasp them anymore. I can't depend on them. They don't seem to nourish me or feed me or support me in the same way. They have faded away. And now we are feeling ourselves in this state of being disconnected. The cycle completed, but not in a clearer way, not in a way which was demarcated by a cut, which had a big sign that said, end. You are at the end of this cycle, with flashing lights. And when you go through, it's like at the end of a finish line, you have this tape that the runners run through, or the whatever, to show that they're at the end of the race. And it says, this is the end of the race. Boom, you went through. It's the end. And then the new one starts. Or maybe what starts is you get the award, the medal, and you now have a new cycle of living in the fame and adulation. It's not like that. Right now, it's definitely not like that. Right now, there's no cut. There's no edit like that. Right now, it's the fade, the long, long fade from color to dissolve. You're just dissolving. And in this energy, you feel disconnected. Yesterday, I woke up and I felt so disconnected, I couldn't believe it. And I'm seeing it, or feeling it in the earth. I want to get to that point, but I just want to describe this some more. And so it's like this disconnection. It's almost like, what's next? What's coming? So not every evolutionary cycle ends clearly and starts new. Sometimes there's a period of I don't want to call it stillness, because it's not really stillness. Even though it may seem like a stillness on the level of evolutionary development, because things aren't moving. But how would you call it? Perhaps you would call it uncertain disconnection, not even a detachment. It's not detachment, because we're not detached. We're disconnected. Disconnection. Maha's phone was thirsting for the connection. It was reaching out for the connection. But what happened instead is that it disconnected him from something that he really needed to be connected to. Now that's an interesting point. By seeking out a connection that was not important, it ruined the connection that was important. It's amazing how the universe reciprocates. That's also a symptom of disconnection, because we really thirst for a connection that's important. We thirst for this important connection. And when we're reaching out for connections which are not important and struggling to make them, even failing to make any connection, we don't have enough energy to keep or maintain or create a connection to something that is important. Now, this lack of connection to that which is important is very much related to our awareness of what's important. And what's interesting about that lack of awareness is that we often fall into patterns where we think that because something was important in the past, it will remain important in the present. You know, it's funny, people have a problem with me and eating. Just give me a second here to explain this. They say that, you know, we can't cook for you because you always have these different ideas of what you want to eat. Sometimes you like this, sometimes you like that. And then sometimes I'll go somewhere to eat and they make me something because someone said, this is what I eat. And then I say, I haven't eaten that in like 4 years or 5 years or 10 years even. And then they get all confused. We don't know what to do for you. You're always changing. As if this is a problem, that I'm changing. I always find this comment not only unusual, but very, very telling. It's a very significant comment. That the fact that I change gives you trouble. That I liked something a year ago, therefore, I must like it today. And if I don't like it today, something's wrong. It's not predictable. It's not dependable. We cannot depend. Well, I think that's very interesting. First of all, the reason why I do change is because my body sometimes says I want this. My body sometimes says I want that. I allow my body to dictate to me what it wants to eat. After all, food is related to my body. It's not really related to so many other aspects of me, although it does. But mainly it's related to my body. So what my body wants to eat is something very important to me. And if my body wants to eat something, I allow it to eat that. Yeah, of course, I get it. I'm eating it. Yes, yes, yes. But I allow it. And the fact that this would disturb someone else is very interesting. The fact that, because I do this with many things, not just eating. It's not that I'm fixed, that I have to be a certain way, think a certain way, feel a certain way, act a certain way. Okay, there are things that, yes, you can depend on. I like to be of service. I like to assist and help. Okay. But sometimes I don't want to broadcast. You know that. I take breaks. I need a break. I allow myself to take a break. Now, what's good for me is good for other people. Let's say I go to your house to eat something and you make me something that I really dislike and I don't feel good about it. then I walk away with this negative impression. Is that good for you? Now, we're talking about food here, but you can place this description in anything we do, any of us, because we all feel the same way about ourselves and other people's relation with us and what we do and how we do it. We all feel the same way. Let's say you expect somebody else to be a certain way towards you or a certain way in general. And you bring to a relationship or you bring to a meeting or a get-together or whatever that expectation. And when they are not that way, you're so disturbed or you're creating some kind of push that it should be that way and you want to change it and force it and your expectation is placing it that way. Well, this causes a disconnection. You and the other person are disconnected because of all these expectations. Because that person's energy went this way and you didn't really connect to their energy. You were connected to the external things that you expected, and your energies move in different directions. You become disconnected. This can happen at any moment in a variety of ways. What would be the way in which we would be able to be aware of such things and to deal with such things? Well, we would first of all actually have to have a real care and concern and love for others. In other words, we would have to so much care for someone else that we would allow them to be what they are. They are going through a cycle. We allow them to do so. It's easier to say it than to do it. Because often, when these things happen, they don't include us. We feel disconnected. So we have to see beyond that energy of doing, that energy which is now doing in another way, and feel the essence of the person, so that we can remain connected as essence, not necessarily as doing. The partnership has to be in essence, not in the externals. This is a really deep and difficult thing to do. It's really easy to say it. It's easy to talk about it. It's easy to conceptualize it. But to feel it when you are on that external platform, disconnected, very difficult. Because how are you going to connect as essence when all the rest is disconnected? Let's say you just meet a person on the street. You may feel equally disconnected from that person as you feel from somebody you're in a relationship with. When this happens, this disconnection, you could feel equally disconnected. The difference is, and this is the important difference, you wouldn't have the inclination or the attraction to connect as essence with the person on the street. Why would you do it? I mean, you could if you were some saint who felt all-encompassing, essential connection to all living beings everywhere. That's another point. We're being practical here. This is our series of practical lectures. The reason you do it with that person you have or think you have or had relationship with is that you once felt that deep connection. So therefore, you have a taste for connecting essence to essence. And when you connect essence to essence, you understand what someone is going through. And you know that your only option is to allow them to do it because you have really no other choice. You can resist. You can fight. But that will make things worse. It will create greater disconnection. Because when two disconnected entities fight, the result is to be more disconnected. So you connect as essence, allowing them to be what they are, and just maintaining that connection. And when the evolutionary cycle begins again, and you can again feel part of that cycle is the opportunity to connect again on other levels, you can do so because you have not broken the connection of essence. This is the point. The awareness of what is important, what we should save, what we should embrace. Not that we're trying to connect to the irrelevant. The problem is that that which is now irrelevant may have been incredibly relevant even a short period ago. That's the problem, because in our minds we have defined this relationship or interaction or facility we depended on or whatever as important, as relevant. But then in the fade out, it becomes irrelevant. But we're not aware of that. So now we're trying to connect as significant and relevant to something which is factually irrelevant. And by struggling to maintain an irrelevant connection. So the point is now the recognition, the awareness, the knowing when to let go, or even a transformation of consciousness. Sometimes we think that there must be things a certain way. We depend on it. We insist on it. But maybe a consciousness of detachment, which flows through life, never demanding that things be that way, that accepts that changes and transformations happen, disconnections happen. This is part of life. So one watches and is aware of this occurrence and allows it, lets it be what it is, and moves with it. It's a new kind of a consciousness that is not depending on solidity, but that is more depending on essence, that energy of overall connection, that energy of overall awareness, that we are all in it together, that we are all going through our struggle together, and that we can stick it out together, even if we're not fulfilling those particular aspects of external responsibility or what we thought it should be like. This is an incredible art, the art of allowance. And disconnection does not have to be a negative thing if you accept it for what it is. Okay, we've talked about this enough. Let's talk about how the earth is the central point of all of this. Just like we talked about essence as the non-changing constant, that which we can always feel, that which we can always connect to, that which we can always depend on. So the earth is the same. It is our shelter. It is what we stand on, we build on, we grow on, we depend on. But because people have so disconnected themselves from the earth due to selfishness and exploitation, ignorance, and an incredible lack of awareness, the desire to absorb oneself in gadgets and gizmos, we have become disconnected from the earth. We have become disconnected from our homes. Everywhere people want to sell and move, at least around here. We're seeing this phenomena going to increase with incredible velocity in Moscow, because people are realizing that the value of their places of residence is artificial. It depends only on what someone else is willing to give you for it. And when you see that that is decreasing, you want to sell fast to catch the wave of the most you can get for it. So when people do that, there are more places for sale, and the prices therefore go down. But people who want to buy look at that and say, prices are going down. Why should I buy? I'll wait. So more and more people sell because prices are going more and more down. Less and less people buy because prices are going down. It creates a collapse. But it creates much more than that. Something much more significant than that. Where you live is your connection to Earth. It is your shelter. If you are thinking of your residence as money, well, how attached to you to the paper bill? Its value? Yes. But the particular bill, do you have any attachment to that? If you had a 1,000-ruble note, and someone else said, here's my 1,000-ruble note, let's switch them, what would be the problem? The value is the same. The note, what do you care about? So if your house is made of paper bills and you really couldn't care if it's this one or another one, you are disconnected from your residence. Your residence is where you place your energy. It's where you place your stability. It supports you and you support it by taking care of it, by keeping it maintained, by painting it, by cleaning it, by fixing things when they break. When you keep things nicely, you're creating an energy. You are putting your energy in your residence. And your residence is vibrating with your energy. The garden around it, if you have a garden, similarly vibrates with your energy. It feels you. And when you don't care about it and you want to leave it and all you think about is its money, you are living a life disconnected. When you think of the earth simply as something to exploit, or you don't even think about it, you don't even care. You don't put your energy into it. You don't even feel it. You don't give thanks to nature for being there. You don't absorb nature and send your love to nature and exchange with nature. You are disconnected from the earth. You are disconnected from nature, from plants, from trees, from the beings. There's no more of this symbiosis between the predominating consciousness on this planet and the earth. We are, in essence, creating by our consciousness the weather, this increase of volcanoes, tsunamis, earthquakes, floods, drought. We create it. The earth is reacting. There must be this symbiosis. And the earth is reacting to our disconnection. We are factually being, we are factually suffering the results of our own choice to disconnect from the earth. Nowadays, everybody is into this social networking phenomena. And on Facebook or MySpace or whatever it is in Russia, Moimir, you could have thousands of friends and then read what this friend is doing and read what that friend is doing and have no connection. You can be completely lonely reading about what other people are doing. Without this face to face, physical faces, physical energetic connections, interactions, life just fades away into some text on a screen, some pictures on a screen, where your energy is detached. Older people couldn't care less about Facebook. It's a phenomenon amongst the older. They think of it as something very strange and alien, because they like, from the old days, face to face. It's a sad thing, but it's the way the evolution has gone, because we've chosen it to go that way. So loneliness has become a big disease. There are many studies about it. It's especially apparent amongst those in the 40s and early 50s, or maybe the 50s, who are that old. Those who are older don't feel this way. They don't feel lonely. But this is a very serious disease. It's being researched very carefully. The disconnection that's taking place on a massive scale in this world, families all over the place, all over the world, instead of living in the same local area, supporting each other. Okay, driving each other crazy, but is it better to be disconnected? So this disconnection as a theme is very much connected to the cycles. Right now we're in a fade out. I see people everywhere grasping to connect, because it's like when you're slipping down a mountain and you're just rolling in these little pebbles down and you're trying to grasp to something to hold on to, but you cannot. So you're grasping for something to hold on to. That feeling of having nothing to hold on to is horrifying. It's a helplessness. It's out of control. And at that point, the idea of going with the flow is horrifying, because the alternative is to crash. So we are in the fade out. What the new evolutionary cycle will be, that I've talked about. It's related to community. It's related to allowance for people to be what they are. Allowance for those who resonate practically together in a way which is beneficial to work together in community. To see the power in it. To see being in community with the earth, to feel a communion with earth, with residences, with energy and energy production, with food, the preparation of it, dealing properly with water and wastewater, and so on. a localized, sustainable environment where food comes from your local region, with that energy, that good energy that comes when it's consciously produced, consciously delivered, consciously prepared, consciously eaten, connected to it. But community's not going to happen today, not going to happen tomorrow, because we're fading. We're disconnected. If you look to the future, if you conceive how from this fade out anything else can happen, then you can cycle. We're waiting for the next cycle. Most people have no idea what it'll be. But if we are aware of what we just came from, if we are aware of the choices we have made that created the situation we're in, we'll also be aware of where to go, how to get there. We can start by caring about our residents, fix it up, clean it, care for it. We can start by going out to nature, feeling it, caring for it. In general, people agree, and they are telling me their own personal experiences about such disconnection and fading of cycle. And that's interesting. Well, it's encouraging, meaning I'm not living in a vacuum here. I want to read some of these comments. I won't say who they're from, in case you didn't want. Here's one comment. The theme is very actual for me at the moment. There are at least two connections that I see to be fading away, and one essence starving because of not enough energy given to it. One connection, which is essence, as far as I understand. But the problem is to distinguish between what is relevant and what is not. It can't be done with intelligence, only by feeling and knowing with certainty. Good comment. Here's another comment. I feel the same about the end of the cycle and some dissolution or dispersal, the word is used. But it seems to me that the new cycle began somewhere in the middle of the previous cycle. Therefore, there is this feeling of dispersal. Not sure what that's supposed to mean. This feeling of some kind of dissolution or perhaps some kind of fading. And that it's not the end, but a continuation of the previous and some development that perhaps is not something that we wish it to be. Well, yeah, maybe that's the way that person is living it. And that's okay. No need for me to comment on that. Okay, and then there's another comment. What you said today means a lot to me on all levels. Sometimes I feel I can't see clearly which connection is important and which is not. But real partnership is only on the level of essence. And in relationship, for example, I think it's more difficult for women than for men to accept connection to be on the level of essence only in some periods, meaning that sometimes it's not, and to accept things as they are. But it's also part of our experience and learning and growing to accept the way our evolution works and to follow the flow rather than trying to keep an external connection and keep things as they used to be. things never stay as they were, and it's important to do a reality check once in a while and make sure that what one takes for granted is still there at all. Good points, wise points. And here's a question, not really a question, but an observation that I found really interesting, and I do have an answer to this one. How do you see the future in communities from the point of view of social interactions? I see a great deviation in the consciousness of people. I mean, this question is very cool because it speaks about community in terms of the division between those who are selfish and those who are not. But there's another issue to community. Usually we talk about it perhaps in the varnashram sense of the term, where you have different kinds of people fitting together to make a community work, because you need to have different kinds of people doing things in any community. But here we have a new factor, selfishness. I'm going to continue reading this. I see a great deviation in the consciousness of people. Some can cooperate without ego and a desire for power and without dominating others or exploiting others. But these people are very few, and groups of them would be very small. But a much larger group are those who are not like this. And these people are completely incompatible with each other. So then we're left with creating a group of, this person used the word elite, communities. I would use the word of community that is assembled with a common interest, but we'll get to that. Because if the question is, if people who feel like this create elite, quote unquote, communities and control who will be allowed to live there and not, on the basis of whether they are qualified, it creates an elitism where some people are better than others and some are just totally incompatible. And again, we have hierarchy, those who are above, those who are below, and boxes, designations, definitions. Some people must be what others must, or what others think they should be. People should be what others think they should be. Very good question. Actually, it is the essence of the problem. Congratulations. Now, not just a question. This is an observation. A studied observation of the reality of community. Let's talk about Varnashram for a second, and then let's talk about something else after that. Brahmanas are Brahmanas because they are an elite group who are not supposed to be selfish, who don't try to exploit others, and don't have the desire for power. Of course, even in the Brahminical community nowadays, we have all of this. We have people who try to dominate with their intelligence, who try to control everything in that way, who exploit those who are beneath them. But in theory, the Brahminical community has no such desire, theoretically. And the Kshatriya, the king, dominates controls for the sake of total social peace and compatibility. So right there, we have something very interesting. We have those who are not selfish and care about all advising those who will dominate for the sake of all. And their domination is only in the sake of facilitation. They make sure that nobody's exploited. Now, let's back away from Varnashram for a second. Let's go into the examples we have today. Let's say a music group. Even if you're a musician, that doesn't mean you can play with any group. You have to, first of all, be good enough. You have to have the skill. You have to have the intelligence to do what other people are doing and to fit in. You have to be able to hear. You have to have perfect rhythm. And you have to be able to feel the mood and expand it. So a musical group is an elite group, which decides who can play with it and not. Nobody cares about that. Everybody thinks that's fine because it creates the best music. What about sports teams? It's an elite group of athletes who are very good at playing that sport. A media company, a business, a software company, interview people, decide who will work for them and not according to their qualities, not even just their skills. It's also about their personality. Do they fit in? Educational institutions, you have to pass the tests to be part of the group of that university, even as a student, to be a doctor. You have to be qualified according to the elite group. We see these examples everywhere. Everywhere throughout all levels of society, we see this form of congregation, which we could call elitism, but what we're really saying is you've got to be of a certain kind of person to fit together in this particular group. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the way it is. It's life. If you want everybody to be able to do anything together with anyone else, you create a mishmash situation where you have the lowest common denominator. The level sinks to its lowest. Okay, everybody has rights. We have right to food, to facilities, to utilities, health and health care, education, entertainment, recreation, secure living, protection, and so on. Everybody has the right to the society. But within the society, you have groups of elite communities. So listen, if you're going to create a community, for example, outside of Moscow, just as an example, it doesn't matter what you say, you are part of the whole country. So even if you make an elite group or an elite community of people who have a certain qualification, you are still part of a much larger picture. Even if you go 30 seconds out your front gate, you have communities in Moscow which are based on elitism right now, where there's a gate. And if you got the money, you can build a house inside that gate and inside that fence. That's elitism. You're rich enough to do it. Even in a certain kind of apartment building, a certain kind of set of flats where it costs a lot, it's an elite group of people who can pay for it. So I don't think that's such a problem. In fact, I don't think it's a problem at all. An elite group can make an elite community. Why not? The problem would be is if they felt themselves to be the elite and therefore pushed down, looked down upon, dominated, or act badly towards others who are not in their group, who are lower. But you said here in this comment that the people who are in this elite are those without the desire to dominate, who aren't trying to exploit. So then it's not a problem. They just choose to live together with other people who feel like they feel, who think like they think. What's wrong with it? And when they interact with others, and they will, because people have to be brought in to build things, to fix things, to visit, to exchange, do it with respect. It's not actually a problem. Why do incompatible people have to get together? I see absolutely no reason why. It's your right when you create community to have a compatible group. Nothing wrong with it. And the task is to assist or facilitate the development of those who are selfish to reduce their selfishness. It's like a task. Is egoism the actual translation of selfishness? I'm not sure about that. Alessia, can you give us your opinion? Give me an instant message if you're still there. If that word actually refers to selfishness, I need another opinion. Yeah, maybe she comes up with one. Hang on. Because I've been worrying about that for some time. Maybe you can also research, because selfish means something quite different. Selfish means where you are drawing to yourself things, where you keep things to yourself and you take for yourself. And the egoistic idea is that, you know, you may not even take something, you may just not care about others, or you may be only caring about yourself. It may have nothing really to do with things, or you may not, you know, you can even assist others out of your feeling to be superior. That would also be egoistic, but that's not selfish. You see the difference? Selfish means that you are, Alessia says there is no other word in Russian, but in reality, there is a difference. There's a difference. Okay. I just thought I'd make you aware of that. And here we have a further comment about that, what I just said. But if someone wants to live in that community, and then those who are in it say, no, you are not qualified, and then if the other person says, but I want to, and then you say, you're not good enough, you must be like this to come in. Well, the same thing for a music group, the same thing for a university, the same thing for a sports team, the same thing for a company. Same thing when you write a book and you send a manuscript to a publisher. The typical rejection letter says, we have read your manuscript with interest, and even though it is quite good, it does not represent the mood or direction we wish to go in as a publishing company. They don't tell you, it sucks, forget it. They tell it to you in a very poetic way. You know, it's just, you have to at one point discriminate. If you are doing something, you are creating something, you have a right to say no. But you can say no in a very nice, a better way. No is no. Rejection is rejection. But just do it with respect. But don't not say no because of being a chicken. Oh, okay, you can come in. Oh, thank you. I'll be good. and then they make a chaos. But one thing that everybody should know in community, that it never stays the same way as the conceivers of the community meant it to be. It always transforms. It's that way throughout the entirety of every society. The people who are young, the ones who take birth, they are different than their parents. They change things. It has to be that way. That's the nature of growth. A nice young grass growing in the field is very soft and sweet. But when it grows to be very high and tall, it's tough and bitter. The horses would rather eat the young grasses or the cows. They don't want the old long grasses. They can't eat them. They're too tough and bitter. Think about that. I could have used another example, but I censored myself. I'm waiting. I see the pencil. You know, Skype has a pencil when somebody's writing, so I'm waiting for what was penciled to appear. There it is. Hey, I answered properly. The question is, you bring optimism to my thoughts about community and relations with people. Hey, what did I do? I just allowed it to be. I didn't do anything. I didn't bring anything. I just allowed it to be. It's not even I said it. Therefore, it can be. I'm just saying I allow it to be. It is so. It is what it is. Okay, here's another question along this line. Would you say there is no way to have some kind of common ground in a society of spiritualists, specifically when there are so many incompatible people inside? Okay, well, guess which society he's talking about. Yeah, you can have common ground. But then sometimes you turn the common ground into some kind of common myth. You have to build up a common myth to maintain a common ground that totally uncommon, different people can relate to. This is the main problem historically throughout time about groups of spiritualists. They need a prophet. They need a central figure. They need the guru who is the magnet for everybody to relate to. Because it's not enough to relate to God. Because God allows everybody to be whatever they are. If you want to have a society of spiritualists, that's the way the thinking goes. You have to restrict it. You can't be like God, because God lets everybody be what they want. So you have to restrict it to make people be this way. Then it will work. Then it will work. If you restrict it, if you make it so, you've got a religion. You've got a society of spiritualists, a name, a scripture, what you do and what you don't do, where you do it, how you do it, when you do it, and so on. So what do you do when you don't have that? Some people, I drive them crazy because I don't tell them what to do. I don't insist that they be any way. They ask me for a name and I say, pick your own, whatever you like. They ask me what to do. I always answer them what's best for them, what they want. They want rules. I say, find your own. They say, what should I think? I say, think what you want. And they think there's something wrong with this. Of course, I also say that, well, if you want to do what's in your interests, you should consider this and consider that. I mean, after all, isn't that what Krishna does in the Bhagavad Gita? Why should I assume that I can do it better than God? Why do I assume that something God does is wrong? It's your responsibility to figure it out. I can help you. Hello, that's what I do. I'm helping. I'm making you aware of all these different things so that you think about it, figure it out, come up with some ideas of your own. Use what you want to make your life better. So who are we? You, all of you and me together, who are we? I mean, after all, I'm not your authority. I'm not your guru. I'm not your prophet. I'm none of those things. So you can't use me as the center and relate because it doesn't work. So you have to deal with each and every person as unique individuals. There's nothing that you can take for granted. You can't take for granted that they think a certain way or they act a certain way or they do things a certain way or even that they feel a certain way. You can't take any of it for granted. You have to deal with each person individually as if they were a brand new creation. Wow, is that work? You can't just say, Hari Bol Prabhu, please accept my humble obeisances, all glories to everybody here, then all, you know, your humble servant, and where you have a language given to you, where you have an expectation given to you. You have none of that. You just have yourself and the other person. And you have to care for the other person and consider the other person rather than just deal with the expectations. Totally new ball game. Everything is based on your personal experience. Nothing is based in an expectation or a demand. You can't take anything for granted. And that's good. When you take things for granted, you tend to not care. And when everything has to be cultivated, it's a demanding thing. Like a plant. You can't take for granted the plant's just going to grow. You got to water it properly, not even too much water. The just right for the plant. Not what you think the plant should take. You, this is organic as you can get. You have to give the plant what it needs. It needs only so much water and not more water. So much sun, not too much sun. Whatever it's good, whatever is good for it. So you have to be responsible. You have to care. That's a new reality, to care. Now, that person has asked me, isn't God also expecting something of us? Well, what is God expecting of you? I can tell you, I don't know if you'll agree, but what God is expecting of you is that you should be the best you can be, that you should live with peace and harmony and joy and love. And when you act in a way incompatible with that, incompatible with yourself, you suffer. It's not that God expects you to do this, do that, think this, think that. That's very hard to understand. We are so conditioned by these demands upon ourselves. It's the same exact thing of a child and the parents, of a dog and the master. We have this burned into our heads that it's somebody else's responsibility to make us be right, but it is not. It is our own responsibility to make us be the best we can be. No one else's. Only us. A baby would be frightened by that. A baby depends on parent. We are not babies. Neither materially, neither spiritually, even though someone may tell you you are a spiritual child, baby, dog, needing a master. It is not so. You need to listen and hear, understand and be aware, and to choose in a way that's the best for yourself and the best for the one of us that we are. And there's only one way to do it. That's by experience. To learn how to live. And on that note, I shall say goodbye. And I think this has been a great session after the original lecture. I think the comments have been fabulous. I congratulate you all, and I'll see you next week, I hope. And I wish you all love. I wish you all prosperity, happiness, health, and a feeling of comfort in yourself, that you should feel comfortable in yourself, that you should feel confident in yourself, that whatever there is, you can deal with it somehow or another. And I wish you goodbye.